Well, here's a challenge for you. Run for the Republican nomination for the top political job in Kansas against a sitting governor and a secretary of state with as much name ID as the president of the United States. But that's what Jim Barnett is doing in a determined bid to win the nomination that he claimed back in 2006 in what turned out to be a losing race against Kathleen Sebelius. Jim Barnett was raised on a Kansas farm. He's a doctor and a former state senator, as well as a former president of the Emporia School Board. And he's right here with me in the studio. And Jim, welcome. Good to have you here.
Good morning. Great to be here, Steve. Thanks.
A small disclosure, about 40 years ago, I worked in Glacier National Park with Jim's wife, Rosie, in what was one of the most memorable summers of my life. And I wish I could do it all over again, Jim, and that would be fun.
40 years flies by quickly.
As we know.
You still look young.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Don't feel as young as I did. Well, this is one tough race. Why are you making it?
Yeah, great question. You know, back in August of 2016, we saw a different kind of legislature elected in Kansas. And by that, I mean legislators elected just to fix the Brownback Collier tax disaster. They were willing to cast the votes they needed to create a new economic foundation for the state, knowing they would get clobbered in this upcoming primary. We saw that and thought maybe the state would be willing to elect a governor who's willing to do the same. The state is in a mess. They need a governor, a lieutenant governor, who will just fix the messes.
How big of a mess, how big of a hole is Kansas in? You served 10 years in the Senate. You have a sense of this. How big of a mess?
Big mess. It's going to take a decade to get out of the mess, if not a generation. Just financially to get out of the hole we're in is going to take a long time. But we also have now generational impact on children and families because of the decimation of services, a systematic dismantling of mental health care, an education system that has gotten behind and hasn't kept up with workforce training. We've got a highway program where we're bonding money, $1.3 billion since 2010, interest-only payments for 20 years before we pay principal. It's that kind of wreck and reckless governing we had from Brownback and Collier.
As you get around the state, Jim, do you have a sense that Kansans understand exactly the state that Kansas is in right now?
It varies from voter to voter, honestly, Steve. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons we're traveling so much. We drive around in a red truck. We have over 75,000 miles, original tires, and one new windshield. Okay? But that is why it is so important we get out. We feel like grassroots and getting out among people is how we actually win voters over. And once you have a conversation, then they understand it.
Let's talk about your background a little bit, Jim. You were raised on a farm, but you say in your campaign biography that while you love the farm didn't love you. And I'm wondering, why not?
You know, I had asthma and hay fever as a kid. You know,
that'll do it.
When you get out in the field or in the grain bin, and you start wheezing, you can't breathe. You think maybe I should do something else. So, I decided to practice medicine. I've done that for 36 years, 28 in Emporia, now in Topeka at Stormont Vale. I love medicine. It's really what I am in my heart as a physician. But I got bitten by the public service bug when I was asked to run for the school board, and I haven't been able to shake that bug bite yet.
I was going to say, when you first got involved, you had a former superintendent in Emporia, I think, who stopped you one day and said, Jim, we've had a series of bond issues in our town, and they've all failed. We need some help. Would you pitch in? And you passed it.
That's right. It was actually, we needed a new middle school and we were out of compliance for Title IX. So women's sports, girls' sports didn't have equal playing facilities. So I did work on that bond issue. It passed. And then I got asked to run for the school board. And I did. I served as president for 4 years. I do believe in term limits, Steve, so I've self-imposed those. But those were my best years of public service. Not that because I was a teacher, I'm not, but I got to rub shoulders with teachers. I saw what a difference they made in children's lives and what a difference they make in our state's future.
So given that, as you look at the funding for state schools going back a number of years now in Kansas, where do you think we are and where do we need to be?
We're not equitably nor adequately funded. I will tell you that, traveling the state. I'll give you some examples. If you go out to Tribune, Kansas, out by the Colorado border, they have school 4 days a week. I would just ask the question out loud, would Johnson County parents be happy with school 4 days a week? If you go to Waukena,
it's 4 days a week. Why?
They can't afford to stay open 5 days a week.
Yeah.
If you go to Waukena, Kansas, they have no band. Their only foreign language is on the internet. We're in Blue Valley. We teach immersion Chinese in second grade. So it's clearly inequitable and by definition inadequate. Now, we came out in November of last year and said we need $600 million stair-stepped in over 3 years to get out of court. We need to get out of court for one very important reason. teachers are telling their own children, don't go into education now because the state has lost respect for teachers, slapped them in the face, and don't value education. So we need to get out of court alone, because you talk to superintendents around the state, the application stack for new teaching positions is down to zero, and that's now. So we have a teacher shortage. But more importantly, we need to get out of courts. We can focus on the changes we need in education to train the workforce that we need to grow our state's economy.
So you said you proposed $600 million over 3 years. The legislature this year did $525 million over 5 years. So I guess in your estimation, that wasn't quite enough.
No, and I would tell you this, just like I tell my pardon me, I tell my patients my crystal ball broke, okay? I don't have any way to predict what the Supreme Court will rule, but I would be surprised if they accept this. I think with the bill the governor signed, we're going to be right back in court. And then, of course, the legislature shot themselves in the foot when they commissioned another study out of Texas that said, oh, we need $2.1 billion. And, oh, by the way, the schools are actually highly efficient in how they spend our money.
So how would you handle this then as governor? What needs to happen going forward? Assuming the legislature gets called back in, you would call for more funding for schools.
I would. And I tell you what, this is really, we can talk about taxes and spending, but what this is really a leadership issue, Steve. We're using standards to follow in court proceedings called the Rose Standards, which come from Kentucky in the 1980s. There's nothing wrong with them, but they're not actually standards at all. They're not measured.
Right.
We need something that is pertinent and measurable today, 2018, for our children. And what I will do as governor is convene the right people like educators, parents, businessmen and women, legislators, State Board of Education members, to develop pertinent standards. And I think they're right under our nose with the new redesign in Kansas called Kansans Can, which Randy Watson is heading, and it's just wonderful. But on the front end is, are kids ready for kindergarten? Because if they're not, they're likely going to fail. On the back end, can they get a job?
Jim Barnett, the Republican candidate for Kansas governor, is my guest. So what's happened in our state, Jim? Because you go back years now, and it seems like the conversation for a decade has been, are we spending enough on schools? And lots of criticism that we're not. And what I'm wondering is, has the state's commitment to quality public schools, which is sort of part of the state's DNA in some ways, has that waned?
It has. Unfortunately, under Brownback and Collier, we saw the shine go off, even in Johnson County. That's happened. And we've seen a narrative from Brownback and Collier that we don't value teachers and we don't value education. That has to change. I look at Kansans as having the following values. We'll educate our children. We'll build our roads. We'll take care of those in need. And we'll pass on something better to the next generation. Under Brownback and Collier, we have failed on all those measures.
Just to be clear, under Governor Brownback, it's well known and been well established that hundreds of millions of dollars were taken from the state highway fund to pay for other governmental needs during the Brownback years. So you're hundreds of millions of dollars in the hole. How do you recoup that?
It's going to be tough. So, you know, when I started looking at this in August of 2016, it became clear to me, Steve, that the only way long term we get out of this mess is economic growth. And so that's why we focus so much on policy and ideas that the governor and lieutenant governor can actually bring for economic growth.
I mean, arguably, Governor Brownback was pushing the same idea. He thought that by cutting taxes, you would spur economic growth.
Well, he hurt the state badly. When you talk to businessmen and women, what they need workforce training, infrastructure, education, healthcare, quality of life issues. That's what they need to succeed. Seventh or eighth on their list consistently was taxes. Brownback and Collier put all their eggs in one basket. They zeroed out taxes for $300,000 plus and let all the rest go to the wayside. So that's the mess that the next governor and lieutenant governor have to fix.
And it's, again, as you're saying here, it's quite a mess.
It is quite a mess. It will take years to get out of this.
You know, there's a push in the legislature right now to pass this constitutional amendment, Jim, to remove authority from the courts when it comes to judging whether enough money has been spent on public schools or not. Would you favor a constitutional amendment like that?
I do not. You know, this isn't about the courts. It's about kids. And it's really about not funding schools adequately and equitably. So, you know, that's been brought up many, many times, and it's failed. failed repeatedly. But we really need to be focusing on our kids, not the courts. It's short-sighted, I believe. And if you look at what the history is in the state of Kansas, there has to be a balance. We should respect our Constitution, and we should respect separation of powers.
You know, you're talking here today, Jim, about the needs of schools, the needs of highways, the needs of support services to grow a better workforce. Ultimately, do we need to raise taxes to fund all that?
You know, that is one of the unique things about our campaign, Steve, is that we're saying we're not going to continue to be a state that lives month to month and paycheck to paycheck. We're actually a state now that lives on credit card debt when you look at what we're doing with bonding for our highway program. We know that if you want to make money, you have to have money in the bank. You have to put money in the bank. You have to invest in the state. It is unique about our campaign that we're saying, yes, we have to do that. So we need a governor and lieutenant governor who will give a budget that balances. If that takes adjustments in revenues, we will do that. And I'm glad to talk about that further if you want.
I want to go back to this notion you said a few minutes ago, Jim, just to underscore this idea. You're saying that the state has been borrowing money to pay for road construction. We're borrowing, and we're going to be paying back interest for 20 years and not getting to the principal until after that time.
That's right. It's $1.3 billion since Brownback and Collier were in office since 2010. Right now, the only new money that has been put in is $400 million, again, just for resurfacing. Now, those roads will be worn out by the time we ever start paying principal on them. That's why I say we've gone to a credit card debt, passing that on to our children and grandchildren. Those are not the values that we represent in this campaign.
When you present this picture to the voters of Kansas as you make your way around the state in your red truck, are people accepting of what you're proposing? Because the mantra in this state for years now has been cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes.
Yeah, that's been the mantra of the Republican Party, is you solve all problems by shrinking government and lowering taxes. It didn't work. We're going to have to invest in the state and recreate a functional state government. That's all the way from the highway program to mental health services. We've had riots and fires in our prisons. DCF, things are they're just unspeakable about what's happened there. So Rosie and I are going to have to recreate a functioning state government that's going to take investment.
Rosie, your wife, and your running
mate. Lieutenant Governor running mate, that's right.
That's an unusual twist for a gubernatorial candidate in Kansas. I've not seen that in my years covering politics. Why did you do it?
Yeah, you know, Rosie has served her country abroad in some tough spots as a chief operating officer of embassies around the world, places like Bosnia, Afghanistan, Kuwait after the Gulf War, with expertise in management and efficiencies, making government work. Government went off the rails during the last 7 years with Brownback and Collier, and we've got to get that back on the rails. The other area of expertise that she has experience is in trade. When you think of all of our ag and livestock, all the products we manufacture in Kansas, we need markets. That's especially a sensitive issue right now, and we're talking about markets and tariffs at the national, international level. She brings that familiarity. She knows what works in governments and what doesn't work, and knows that our embassies support those people around the world. We also know that we've got to recreate a functioning state Department of Commerce. We used to have people internationally in there, those offices helping us with trade and new businesses. They were all decimated again through the Brownback Collier tax disaster. So we've got to recreate that functioning state government.
Jim Barnett, the candidate for governor of Kansas, is my guest. Let's turn to guns, Jim. The state has expanded rights for gun owners. Has it gone too far?
You know, it probably has, really, Steve. If you look at Kansas, we're even beyond Texas in terms of where we are. And, you know, we hear this come up a lot in terms of school safety. What can the governor and lieutenant governor do in terms of school safety? So, you know, part of that is funding. We need to have funds for schools to have cameras, alarms, locks, doors between rooms so that there is an incident, they can move from one classroom to the other. Any new school built today is going to be under one roof, so there's not an open space for shooters. But every school district we face, we talk about mental illness. And so the next governor has to restore and rebuild a functioning mental health system in Kansas. It's been systematically dismantled by Brownback and Collier, and actually the privatized Medicaid system called CanCare, which is a wreck, has cut beds, it's cut services, it's cut treatment. So now in Kansas, we address mental health care in one of four ways. One, our emergency rooms where nurses aren't safe or trained. Two is in our jails. Every law enforcement officer you speak to, we're now incarcerating them, and how wrong is that? Three is in our schools where they're not prepared. And four is in our homeless shelters. That's not what Kansas is about, but that's where we are now with Brownback and Collier's tax disaster.
So the idea of expanding Medicaid, so controversial in Topeka for so many years, you're all for it?
Absolutely, for two reasons, humanitarian and economic. If you don't have access to health care, you wait until it's too late. You lose a limb, lose a life. And then if you lose your hospital, it's like losing your school. It's also nursing homes. Long-term care facilities now won't accept patients on Medicaid because they know they're not going to get paid or they're going to have to eat the many months that they take care of someone. So anybody in Kansas who has a senior in their home or family that may be close to outliving their resources, they should be worried about that. Just to make this worse, they use it for profit companies like Maximus that just delay for $25 million. And then we lost all of the good state employees that used to make that system work. Now they're gone. And then United Healthcare, the CEO of United Healthcare made over $66 million, his last salary. And that's 8% profit off the top. Those dollars should be in Kansas communities and supporting healthcare in Kansas. And what's happening is at the city and county level, cities are raising sales tax, counties are raising property tax to help keep hospitals open when we're sending our tax dollars to other states. That's another reason we ought to be thinking twice about expanding Medicaid. We absolutely should do it.
You know, what happened to Kansas, Jim, that it went as conservative as it did? When you were in the state Senate, it was a more moderate body than it is today. The state is, you know, the state of Dole, the state of Kassebaum. What's your analysis as to why Kansas went in the direction that it did?
Big money. You know, just a few very wealthy Kansans controlled the state.
The Koch brothers.
And some more. They controlled the election process. Electing a legislature that was dysfunctional and a governor who was a disaster, along with his lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about Brownback and Collier. So I think Kansans have seen the harm, and now they see the need to come back toward the center and use some common sense and just fix things. So I think Kansas has the opportunity to lead the nation back to the center. But if we elect lightning rods like either Kobach or Collier, Republicans better think twice, because if they want a Republican governor, they better look at Jim Barnett and Rosie Hanson, because Brownback and Collier make it highly likely this state's not going to have a Republican governor. Nothing against the independents or the Democrats running. They're good people. I'm just saying that's, so I think, a fact.
I want to go back to guns. We were on it just a few minutes ago, Jim. Concealed weapons, as you know, are now allowed on college campuses. What do you make of it?
Well, it's highly controversial, and it depends on where you live. If you're out in liberal Kansas in Seward County, they're very comfortable with that. If you go to Edwards campus in Johnson County, they're not so comfortable with that. I'm a local control person. I learned that on the school board. You know, it's quite—
Meaning that different communities can make different decisions about how this issue should be handled.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, we had a conservative governor, lieutenant governor with Brownback and Collier, and they took local control away. You know, you would think that would be a Republican idea. They actually took it away. I'm a local control person. I respect people's elections and local differences.
You know, not long ago, speaking of guns, Kris Kobach was in a parade in Shawnee in which he was standing in a Jeep next to a gun mounted in the truck that looked like a 50 caliber machine gun. It turned out to be a replica, but there was enough of an outcry over it that the city actually went so far as to issue an apology. What did you make of it?
Well, you know, it's a political stunt, and that's how the Secretary of State has gotten his name recognition in part. But it shows a great insensitivity to many young children who are rightfully so worried about safety in schools. They train for that, parents as well of those children. So I'm afraid it was very insensitive on his part, but he did that to gain further reputation and, you know, flame up his base. I mean, this is red meat, and that's what he needs. The secretary has a high name recognition, but he has a very high rating of unfavorabilities. So he's got to flame that base to get them out to vote for him to have a chance of winning the election.
One final question before you go. Two hot-button topics right now. Expanding legalize sports, gaming, gambling in Kansas, would you favor it or not? And recreational use of marijuana, where do you come down?
Both important topics. You know, on the issue of gaming, I'd have to look at that carefully at the actual legislation before I would go there. But the reality is it's coming. you know, because of the Supreme Court decision. So we'll deal with that on a practical basis. On the issue of marijuana, it's actually interesting. That's one of the most common questions we get on the campaign trail. And it's certainly by far not young people. It's across all age spectrum. I started with hemp. I said we've got to, as a state, go ahead and look at industrial or agricultural hemp for, you know, ag products, less water utilization, increase diversity in crops. The second place where I think we should look seriously is medicinal marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, I've practiced medicine 36 years. I am always trying to figure out how I can help people. I think the time has come for our state to look at that.
But recreational use,
you know, I think the issue is still out there. I have lots of conversations. I'll want to approach that on a science-based approach, and I actually think the data is still out there for review and question.
Okay. Jim Barnett, he's running for the Republican nomination for Kansas governor. Jim, thanks for coming in. Travel safely. Nice to see you.
You too, Steve. Thank you.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk to our film critics about the latest foreign art and independent films now showing. I'm Steve Kraske. You're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. We're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, we learned about Missouri's new lieutenant governor and why his appointment has caught fire from Democrats in Jeff City. You can hear that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Monday, we'll hear the argument for why reducing residential segregation is the best way to also reduce racial inequality across the country. That's Monday on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, who would have guessed that one of the most anticipated documentaries of 2018 would be about Mr. Rogers? Yes, that Mr. Rogers, the man who helped raise legions of kids on public TV by emphasizing that special quality of kindness. That's one of the films our film critics will discuss today as the summer movie season formally gets underway. Our critics are film professor Cindy Haynes. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Veteran critic Steve Walker.
Yes, hey, thanks.
And Bob Butler, who was the longtime film reviewer for the Kansas City Star. You can read his reviews at butlercinemascene.com.
Glad to be
Robert,
here.
How are you? Yeah. Let's turn to our first film right off the bat here, American Animals, Steve. It's a docu-thriller. It's not based on a true story. It is a true story known as the Transy Book Heist. In 2004, four college students attempted to steal valuable books from their school's library.
They did, and these books were John James Audubon's Book of Birds.
Oh, that's right.
A copy of which sold last week for $9.6 million.
Wow.
So these boneheaded college students got the idea that this would be a heist they could get away with. This director, Bart Layton, made a movie called The Imposter a few years ago. Brilliant. American Animals is my favorite movie I've seen in 2018.
No kidding.
It's so creative because we get the real kids and their real parents, and then we have actors recreating the build-up to the heist. It just kind of ping-pongs back and forth. So enjoyable, so entertaining, and so creative. I just think it's terrific.
Steve, I remember we had a conversation years back when we first started going to True False. And what's a documentary? What's with all this recreation? I mean, it's so blurred right now. I mean, and this film, I think, takes it to extremes. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Right. There's no blurring for me because it's like the parents sitting there talking about that. They even say on the screen, here's the real kid. And then we know actors like Evan Peters is playing one of the lead ones. A terrific, entertaining 2 hours. Knock yourself out. You'll have a blast.
The best film of 2018, is it?
Not even close.
Is that right?
I enjoyed it, but at the end of it, I was sort of is that all there is? I love the methodology, the approach they took. It's just that I felt that the filmmaker didn't know quite what to make of these guys or how he felt about them. And as a result, I had that sort of...
Or how to put it together.
I had that sort of vacuum in my head and heart at the end of it, too.
Mm-hmm. And I want to distinguish between best movie of the year, I don't know, but it's my favorite movie I've seen this year.
Okay.
It doesn't mean it's the best necessarily.
That's what we're always in search of, Steve. Mm-hmm. Our favorite movie. Really, it's true.
Would you recommend it, Cindy?
Yeah. I thought it was entertaining. It had a lot of flaws, but No, I'd recommend it.
Definitely give it a try. It's certainly not. It's something that he. It's a different way of approaching a narrative, and that in and of itself it makes it valuable.
It is. I remember watching it, going, "Wow, this is crazy."
We have a clip here from American Animals.
It's a clip of the real parents of the kids, kind of wondering how did things go so wrong.
There was nothing in their backgrounds that would suggest, you know, something like that would happen. I was at a loss.
They were pretty darn good kids. These boys weren't criminals. They didn't have records. And, you know, for something like this to happen to the boys and to the school, of course, it was a big loss at the time.
Every parent's worst nightmare, maybe, or
they are good kids. Yeah. They just didn't know what they were doing.
One critic described it as a mashup of Ocean's 11 and Harold and Kumar.
Wow. Okay. The film again, American Animals. Okay. How about our next film here, Cindy? Izzy Gets the F Across Town. I can't say what the word F stands for. In this comedic misadventure, a desperate girl tries to make her way across L.A. to crash her ex-boyfriend's engagement party. And, of course, chaos ensues.
It stars Mackenzie Davis, who plays a gal named Izzy. She's self-centered, arrogant, cruel. Doesn't have a lot going for her, but she's obsessed with getting to this party where her ex-boyfriend is announcing his engagement to her former best friend. And it's done in a series of silly chapters of her effort to get money. You think she could just get on the bus and go.
Apparently, but that's too easy.
That's too easy. She just makes it incredibly complicated. She claims to be a punk rock singer, and nothing in her life is simple. Carrie Coon plays her estranged sister and a fellow band member.
Actually, that was the best scene in the movie. It
was sweet.
Two of them singing to some party guests.
Yeah, Carrie Coon is terrific in it. She should be known to watchers of HBO's The Leftovers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it has a relatively good supporting cast. Unfortunately, poor Haley Joel Osment just hasn't found the right part these days. He plays Walt, a sad sack friend of Izzy. I enjoyed it. It was silly. It was not profound. But I think Mackenzie Davis, who's in Tully right now, a film.
So is it possible to enjoy a non-profound film? Cindy Haynes says yes.
I agree. I put it on my three to see. I think Mackenzie Davis is a delight. She's just a bundle of frayed nerves as this failed cater waiter, and I just really enjoyed her
work.
But
not Bob Butler.
I was underwhelmed with a title like this. Let's face it, this is an in-your-face title.
Yes.
I expected an in-your-face movie, but I found it way too conventional and not nearly on the edge enough. I wanted Run Lola Run meets...
there you go.
You know, meets Tangerine.
Hours. Oh, yeah.
Or
yeah.
After Hours, and I didn't get it, so... Yeah.
What's the clip we have here, Cindy, from Izzy Gets the F Across Town?
Well, Izzy is talking to her friend Walt, played by Haley Joel Osment, who has hooked up with a Tinder buddy, and she's passed out on the floor. So, here we go.
So, you love this girl, right?
I do.
Yes. Okay. You need to tell her.
I know. I will. Eventually.
No, now. Do it now.
But now she's passed out.
Exactly. This is the best time.
Now, what are you talking about?
Listen, until you say them, the words that you feel so deeply in here, that you so desperately want to say to her, man, you'll be afraid. You won't know if you can find the courage. But once you say them out loud, even just to yourself, then you'll know. You can do it.
No, this is ridiculous.
What? What do you have to lose by trying?
It's embarrassing. I don't want to be embarrassed.
That's impossible. She's passed out.
You're not.
Walt. Hey. I've done a lot of stuff for you. Odd stuff.
The film again is Izzy Gets the F Across Town. Two of our critics liked it. Bob Butler's cranky today and says maybe
bah
not,
humbug.
Bah humbug. Not quite enough. Okay. Let's go to a film that I guess I'm interested in. Won't You Be My Neighbor, Bob Butler. It's the new documentary about Fred Rogers, the host of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
This movie is moving, insightful, inspiring, and depressing.
Wow.
It's all those things because Fred Rogers was exactly what you saw on screen. There's no difference between that goofy guy in the sweater and the man he was in real life, a Presbyterian minister who at one point says, love is at the root of everything, love or the lack of it, and devoted his life to trying to reach kids. Now, I was in college when Mr. Rogers came on, so I'm way past the Rogers curve, right? And in fact, I would see Sesame Street because when you're young and in college, Sesame Street was funky. Mr. Rogers was square as they came.
Yes.
Hand puppets, for crying out loud.
Yes.
Here's the thing, though. You watch this show, Fred Rogers emerges as a hero, as a guy who could not function in Trump's America simply because people wouldn't sit still for somebody who was that on-your-sleeve emotional. There are scenes in here that will have you weeping. I can almost guarantee it. But think about this. 2 days after Robert Kennedy was killed, the little hand puppet asks on the air, what is assassination? And that's what they talk about that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, he devoted entire weeks to divorce and death. He made sure that the policeman in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood was African-American. And there's a marvelous scene where on a hot day, they both take off their shoes and put their feet, white and black, in the same wading pool. He didn't make a big deal of it.
Yeah.
There it was.
There it was, yeah.
The guy was so decent, it was just ridiculous.
So why depressing is an depressing adjective for this film?
Depressing because what we don't have anymore.
Hmm.
We don't have room for some guy who just listens to kids and talks to them.
Yeah.
I hear you saying it runs right smack into the coarseness of America.
It
right
does. There. Well, Morgan Neville, who directed this, also did 20 Feet to Stardom. You know, the movie about the backup singers for rock and roll.
Yeah.
And he did that William F. Buckley Gore Vidal documentary, Best of Enemies. This guy is good. Technically, the film is, you know, okay, but it doesn't have to be anything more than that because it's the story of Fred Rogers.
Hmm.
Would you call it a tearjerker?
Oh, abso-freaking-lutely. I mean, you'd have to be withered up and dried and blown away not to be moved by this. The guy had such a heart.
Yeah.
So amazing. There you go.
This is
Mr. Rogers is explaining himself to us.
Love is at the root of everything. All learning, all parenting. All relationships, love or the lack of it. And what we see and hear on the screen is part of who we become.
Does he emerge as a fuller character than, you said it's the same person we see on the screen, it's the same person in real life. Do we get more of who
you
he
see,
is?
You see some backstage stuff, people pulling stunts on him, playing jokes on him on the set, and him reacting to that. You see him dealing off the set with children, and this is pretty amazing. The kids absolutely just come up and love him. It's nuts. And another thing. He considered that little tiger hand puppet to be his alter ego, and there's a great scene with him talking to kids. He opens up a bag and starts pulling out the puppets, and the kids are talking both to his hand and to him at the same time.
Oh, you're kidding.
It's just great stuff.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah,
anyone want to guess who's doing the biopic of Fred Rogers next year?
Who's that?
Tom Hanks.
That's right. I did see that somewhere. Yeah. Now, that'll be interesting. What a great pick. You can see that right away maybe by realizing that Tom Hanks will play Mr. Rogers. That's interesting. Okay. Okay, so big thumbs up from Bob Butler for Won't You Be My Neighbor. Okay, a film, I just saw this, Cindy, Hearts Beat Loud. While his daughter, an accomplished teenager who will be attending UCLA to study medicine in the fall, focuses on her studies, her aging hipster dad and owner of a record shop, of course, is determined to stay connected by insisting that they continue their regular jam sessions and they turn out to be pretty good. The film, again, Hearts Beat Loud.
So, Steve, you have sons, right?
Yes.
Yes. Could you identify with this dad?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Who was losing...
saying goodbye to his daughter and not wanting to let her go.
Right. It's a sweet film, and it's a premise that we really haven't seen before in this relationship between... Nick Offerman's character.
Right.
He does a really, really sweet
job. Really nice job.
But his co-star in this film, Kiersey Clemons.
Yeah. She's got pipes.
She is fantastic in this. She's in the movie Dope.
Mm-hmm.
And has a beautiful voice. She's a beautiful young woman,
yes,
and a very, very good actress who's just sort of tolerating her geeky dad. So it's a movie I would recommend. The characters and the story is unpretentious, but it's very effective.
I think it's this year's Once. Remember Once?
Yes. Good. Yes.
It's music, musical, but it's also insightful about relationships.
Yes.
And you just kind of fall in love with these characters. They're great.
You
and
do.
Toni Collette is in it.
Right.
Blythe
She's
Danner.
In every movie. Man, she is.
Lately.
I thought it got a little sleepy in the middle segments. That I drifted away a little
bit. A little too much music, you think?
No, that music I thought actually perked it up a little
bit. I want that
bit,
soundtrack, actually.
You can. It's on iTunes.
At least. God, it's Mitski and Sleater-Kinney and Animal Collective. It's a great soundtrack.
Yeah, Animal Collective. That's the one I was trying to think. Yeah. I'm going to listen to that song. What's the clip we have here?
Actually, it is.
It's her singing.
Nick,
we get to
hear
Kiersey Clemons.
Yeah, she actually sings.
Singing.
Yeah, and a comment from her dad.
From Hearts Beat Loud.
Let's do it again. I don't know what it is. I can't make my heart feel like that.
When did you write this?
Earlier today.
You can't make your heart feel like what?
I don't know.
Well, try and think about it. You can't make your heart feel like what?
Full, I guess. Like some of it's missing.
So in this age of Spotify, good things can happen.
Well,
really
it's so
can.
Nice to see Nick Offerman, who took off on Parks and Rec as a person so unlike this dad.
Yes, yes.
He's got a film career, and he shows up in a lot of films, too. I always like watching him.
My piece of trivia, Nick Offerman included two tunes in the film from his wife Megan Mullally's band, Nancy and Beth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we were listening to the slow version of that song. There's a faster version that comes up in the movie that will have you bouncing in your seat. It's just a great, great tune. Okay, again, that film, Hearts Beat Loud. Steve Walker, let's
go to
a film titled The Seagull. In the early 20th century, an aging actress and her lover visit the estate of her elderly brother. This is from a Chekhov story.
It is Chekhov's play set in Moscow in 1904, actually in a country house outside of Moscow. I'm fascinated by this play after seeing this movie, this adaptation that is good and bad. It's good because Annette Bening's in it. Brian Dennehy's in it. Saoirse Ronan's in it. So there's some really talented...
You can't miss with any of those.
Well, there's some talented actors. I loved all the intercut love triangles going on. He's in love with her, who's in love with her, who's in love with him, who's...
They're love pentangles, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And there's...
What's a pentangle?
Well, that's a five-sided relationship.
Okay, thank you.
Jealousy is just churning away in this country house. The flip side to me is that they all speak in these very flat American accents, and these are all talented actors who could certainly
affect an accent.
Yeah. And that really kind of took me out of it.
Hmm.
But I'm fascinated by the story now. I've just been reading a lot about The Seagull, and I've read it, of course, the play, but...
I think it's incredible that the play is 122 years old and is still relevant.
Mm. And this clip, it's funny. Chekhov thought he was a comedy writer, and other people said, what? Your plays are so dark and dreary. I think in this scene, you get just a little clip of Saoirse Ronan's character talking about what marriage will mean to her.
I've decided I am going to tear this love out of my heart. I'm just going to rip it out by the roots.
How are you going to do that?
I'll get married to Medvedenko.
I think that's overdoing it.
Is it? Loving without hope.
That's from The Seagull. Bob Butler, what'd you think?
You know, I love Chekhov, but I got to tell you, I love him more on the stage. I believe his dialogue, his characters are more, they work better through a proscenium arch than they do through the movie camera. I just think his dialogue, which was praised as being so naturalistic when he wrote it, now it feels a little forced. In the theater, I'm fine with that. On the screen, sometimes I have an issue. Yeah. I still like the show, and the acting is great in this movie.
Yeah, and I think there's some very funny moments about being an artist and what it means, and there's a lot of pretentious individuals in this story.
Right, and it's the play that created the line, some of you may have heard, that if there's a gun in Act 1, it'll be going off by the end of Act 3.
Mm-hmm.
This is the play that inspired that little saying.
Well, terrific actors taking part in The Seagull, and generally thumbs up.
All the way around.
Catching it okay. Steve Walker, a film, Goodland, the body of a drifter is discovered the day a photographer arrives in a small Kansas town.
This film comes from a Kansas City company, Rockhaven Films. It was written and directed by Josh Doak, who I've been emailing back and forth as the movie got to get closer to its opening. It stars Cinnamon Schultz, who's been on this show, Steve. She's a local actress who was in Winter's Bone.
Oh, that's right.
She still works all the time in Kansas City. She plays the sheriff in a small town filmed in Goodland, Kansas. And they're trying to find out who is this body that's all chopped up in this Reaper?
A combine went over it.
Combine. So there's a heist that kind of gets a boil. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. Cinnamon's good.
It's a great, great looking movie. Mm. I feel that the writer director, he's a better director than he is a writer. I felt some of the dialogue tries awfully hard to be country ironic, you know.
And too many bad cliches about that pouring piss out of a boot and
I actually found the crime subplot to be dropped on my head, basically. Where did that come from?
It's a little forced, I think.
No sense. Hmm. But good-looking movie.
We watch a lot of independent films, and I think this one is right up there in terms of quality.
Huh.
And two other local actors are in it, show up too, Scott Cordes and Kip Niven. They both appear in a lot of movies that are filmed in the general region.
Yep. We have a brief clip here, Steve.
Yeah, we do. Cynthia, I don't recall what...
From the trailer.
Okay. Oh, it's from the trailer. It's kind of the setup of the film.
This is from Goodland.
So, what do you got for me?
Just a drifter who wandered into town and showed up dead in a field.
Got any idea who he might be?
That's that old boy we dropped off outside of town yesterday. Drifted into town a couple days ago, and we tried to help him on his way.
If that intrigues you, then you could enjoy this film.
Well, and seeing local actors do some
that's
good
always
work,
fun. That's
really it's nice. Showing at Screenland?
Yes, Screenland.
Okay.
Tapcade in the Crossroads.
Just have a couple of films left here. First Reformed, it's a small-town priest played by Ethan Hawke who grapples with his faith, Bob.
Oh, well, I think this is a terrific movie. It's from Paul Schrader, the man who wrote Taxi Driver and has done films like Mishima. Yeah. He's sort of a cult figure more than anything else, but... Paul Schrader grew up in a Calvinist church that did not allow him to see a movie until he went to college.
Hmm.
So those two elements, fiercely religious background and his love of cinema, come together in this, the story of a minister. First Reform is a church. It's basically run by a mega church as a kind of religious theme park. It's a church that's been around for 250 years. And he's the pastor, and he's only got a few people that show up. Like I say, it's a tourist trap more than anything else. Ethan Hawke is fantastic as a man coming to grips with the loss of almost everything important in his life. His son died in war. His wife divorced him. But he is now dealing with a parishioner whose husband wants her to abort her child because, he says, the world is coming to an end, and I don't want to bring a child into it. He's basically an eco-terrorist. There's a fantastic scene where the young man and the priest, in a counseling session, you can see the priest is starting to be turned to the young man's point of view.
And in this clip, Ethan Hawke's character is kind of philosophizing after that about what is the purpose of God, if not this.
Okay, this is from First Reformed.
I wasn't aware that I had offended. Jesus doesn't want our suffering. He suffered for us. Mm-hmm. He wants our commitment and our obedience.
Mm-hmm. And what of his creation? The heavens declare the glory of God. God is present everywhere in every plant, every river, every tiny insect. The whole world is a manifestation of his holy presence. I think this is an issue where the church can lead, but they say nothing. The U.S. Congress still denies climate change? Where were we when these people were elected?
That's the film First Reformed. It stars Ethan Hawke. Okay, and you guys liked it.
I loved it, actually.
It opens at Liberty Hall in Lawrence today.
Just a warning, it's very dark and measured.
It's very Bergman-esque.
Can we just kiss a final film here that I believe is leaving town or
is about to?
The Rider.
The Rider may be the most beautiful movie of the year. Steve, I'm sorry to interrupt.
A young cowboy struggles to find a new way to connect with the world he loves after suffering a near fatal head injury.
Right.
It's beautiful. It's directed by Chloe Zhao.
Born in China, educated in the U.S. in London.
And this kid, Brady Jandro, plays this character named Brady. Who also was a rodeo rider, who also had a head injury that we get to see with his many staples in his skull. And his real father plays his father. His real sister, who is autistic, plays his sister. And he's just a good guy, but he's missing that connection to horses that sustained him.
He's been told if he gets on a horse again, it could kill him.
I want to recommend Every Act of Life. It's a documentary showing Sunday, June 24th at 1:30 at the Tivoli as part of the Out Here Now Film Festival with some fantastic movies. If you care anything about Broadway and theater, it's a documentary about Terrence McNally, and it's terrific.
If you had to pick just three films to recommend to our listeners this week, we post them every week at kcur.org. Steve Walker, what would you go with?
American Animals, from my enthusiasm. That's not a surprise. And The Rider and the Seagull. I'm going to
go for
stick
it.
To that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cindy?
The Rider and Izzy and American Animals.
Okay. Robert?
Won't You Be My Neighbor, First Reformed, and Hearts Beat Loud.
Okay. We'll leave it right there. On Monday, Kansas's Democratic Minority Whip, Laura Kelly, from the state Senate, is here to tell us why she wants the state's top job. Our theme music is composed by the great Bobby Watson. We had help this week from Linda Scherer, Michael Byers, Stephen Steigman, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, Dallas Johnson, and Emily Park. I want to thank Bob Butler, Cindy Haynes, Steve Walker for their great reviews this week. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.